It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The Keystone Crossroads Initiative looks at the challenges facing cities in the Commonwealth. Today marks the beginning of the initiative's Urban Waterfront series. Keystone Crossroads reporter Irina Zhorov and editor Naomi Starobin join us to talk about the series and how cities can make better use of their waterfronts for economic and recreational development. Irina Zhorov is in our studio. Welcome to the show, Irina.
Good afternoon.
And Naomi Starobin is with us by phone from Philadelphia. Hello, Naomi.
Hi, Paul.
Okay, so you guys say cities across Pennsylvania are dealing with a very changed economy that has taken business away from the rivers, and that those cities are now rethinking what should happen along those waterfronts and who should have access to them. How so? What's the rethink here?
Well, I'll let Irina talk about her excellent feature that that you'll hear on WESA. But in general, and she talks about Pittsburgh specifically, but in general, what we're seeing along these formerly industrial riverbanks in Pennsylvania cities, and this is large and small cities, by the way, is that the industries have, you know, for the most part, gone away. And what happens then? Then you have sites that are polluted and empty and maybe not so beautiful along the river, and you've got people who would like access to the river. And so what cities have had to do and are in the process of doing, some more successfully than others, is to clean up the riverside, to clean up those industrial sites and provide access for people so that they can go to the water, fish, drink beer, you know, frolic on some barges, maybe with some beautiful plants on them, things like that going on all over the state right now.
Can what you're talking about here, things like development, can they turn into areas where gentrification can result and therefore create a situation where people might not have access to the waterfronts? Is that a concern? Has it come up in conversations and in interviews that you've had in putting this series together?
It does, because, you know, often access to water means, you know, money. You've got to have the money to have access to water. I think we're seeing it to a certain extent right in Pittsburgh on Washington's Landing, which is an island, a couple miles north of the Point.
Yeah, it's in the Allegheny River. Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty exclusive place, right?
Yeah, there's a nice development on it. It looks almost suburban, but it's in the middle of the city. But, you know, at the same time, places like Washington's Landing, and this is part of the bigger conversation about waterfront redevelopment, there's also public access. There's trails on it. There's public spaces. There's a restaurant on it. And I think with a lot of waterfront redevelopment, as cities are rethinking them, public access has become a really important part of the conversation. So even if there is a really exclusive office building or residences going up, I think that part of the conversation is making sure that there's paths so that people who don't live or work there can also access it.
And Irina, you have a really amazing story that's part of this series. It's about the Point right here in the Berg, and you know how the whole outlook and strategic view of the Point changed way ahead of what other cities were doing. Pittsburgh was ahead of its time, wasn't it, in terms of how the outlook about the Point and how it should be used changed?
In some ways, the Point was the very first waterfront redevelopment project in the city. It was part of the First Renaissance program. So after World War II, the city started reconsidering what the Point should be. And so from a train depot and kind of constantly flooding area with some residences, some slums still on it.
Industry
has become this really beautiful park. But I think what's interesting about the Point, you know, the fountain went on in 74. It took several decades of planning to remove the bridges, move them away so the park could be actually bigger. So it took a lot of time to plan it, and when it finally opened up in 74, it was not, in a lot of ways, it helped redevelop the downtown and the riverfront, but in other ways, it was still a lot of time before the city started reconsidering some of its other waterfronts. It wasn't until the 90s till we had a more comprehensive plan. So in some ways, it was ahead of its time, but in others, the city was kind of slow to do that with other parts of the water.
And what you're looking at now in this series, among the things you're looking at, is something called tactical urbanism. Which of the two of you would like to explain what that is?
Well, I'm happy to. It's one of these fancy terms that means something pretty simple. oftentimes in cities, people want something to happen faster than, you know, city red tape allows it to happen. So they'll just take the matter into their own hands. For instance, people will put money in a parking meter, so, you know, so the city's getting the revenue, but instead of putting a car there, they'll put up a few tables and chairs so people can, you know, eat or hang out there. In Philadelphia, for instance, there's something called Spruce Street Harbor Park, and it's a pretty inexpensive, quick setup. Three barges brought in, sand on the barges. There's beer and food vendors. There are hammocks in the trees on the banks of the river and beautiful lights. And it is a very popular place for Philadelphians and for tourists. And it didn't cost much to build. It comes and goes with the summer season. It's the second season now. They've had a huge turnout, much higher than they expected. It didn't cost a lot of money. It wasn't a multi-million dollar project where we're putting, you know, stores and hotels and convention centers along the water. But it did attract people to the water. And the long-term goal there is to do that sort of large dollar development eventually. But first, you got to get people to get used to coming down to the water. You know, we're sort of open for business. We're not going to charge you an arm and a leg to just come here and enjoy it with your family or your pals.
And there's a hidden community of people living in houseboats on the Delaware River?
There is, and I think every city probably has these kinds of communities. We have a video about this community just under, in the shadow of the Ben Franklin Bridge in Philadelphia, a community of people, and we've got some great characters in that video, people who are there because it costs less, people who are there because they can't stand living in the city, but they want to be near it, and people who just have... I mean, there's a law student there who she and her boyfriend just wanted to do something a little bit different, not live in the standard, you know, sort of graduate student dorms.
And you mentioned, Naomi, that people can see a video of this. So this is a multimedia series, which is something that people can access in a variety of ways.
That's right. If you and the website is keystonecrossroads.org and then /waterfronts with an S on the end. And you'll see our stories there. We launched today, so there's six stories there now. There'll be more as time goes on. And one of the stories you can click on is this video of these people who live in their boats just next to downtown Philadelphia.
I love it. And Irina, you are working on another story in addition to the one about the Point, looking at other aspects of the waterfront in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that's right. So a lot of the stories we focused on were about this rethinking of the waterfronts, of the water itself as spaces for the public for recreation. But I think what was maybe a little bit lost in that is industry's not completely gone. So last week I actually went out on the water up the Mon River and I saw the Clairton Coke Works, the largest coke plant in the U.S. So industry is in a lot of ways very much alive on the rivers, contributing to the local economy. So I kind of wanted to look at that as well. So that will be the other story. Industry's not gone completely. It's very important still on the waterfronts here.
And we only have about a minute left, but one of the problems that this series looks at is the, you know, different problems that cities are having to confront. Things like highways that are barriers to the river. How are some cities solving this problem?
Well, if you look at a place like Seattle, they have this big boring machine named Big Bertha. It's been a little infamous because it actually got stuck recently. But they are boring a big hole under what was an elevated highway, and they're going to sink the highway right along their waterfront there. Boston's done the same thing.
Yeah, Boston had the big dig, and Philadelphia as well is considering, or at least looking at, covering a piece of I-95 through the city that would give more access to the putting a park on top of it and giving more access to the water there.
The Keystone Crossroads Initiative's Urban Waterfront Series, again, beginning today. And you can, again, the website, Naomi?
KeystoneCrossroads.org/waterfronts. And there's a terrific, very fun interactive map there where you can look at these points, photos and videos and audio of places all over the state.
And that's Keystone Crossroads editor Naomi Sterobin joining us by phone from Philadelphia. We've also been talking with our own Irina Zhuroff, a reporter for Keystone Crossroads here in studio. Thank you both for joining us to talk about this fascinating series.
You're welcome, Paul.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. You can catch the entire show online at WESA.FM or as a podcast in iTunes. Until tomorrow, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.